Happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Before we get started with our program, I want to say a big thanks to everybody who supported us during our One Day Wednesday spring membership drive. I could hardly believe it. And we were hoping for 4,000 new members, and we've got 4,300 new members recontributing. Anyway, contributing over $420,000 to support Wisconsin Public Radio and the programming you depend on. So it was a record fundraising day for Wisconsin Public Radio. So a big thank you. We had lots of people, a couple hundred people during this program who called in with contributions. So thanks so much. And we're right back to business. That's great. One day instead of a whole week. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry, William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA, directs the Initiative for Science Literacy for Wisconsin. We're really pleased to have him back to talk about science, science education, research, and, of course, take your questions or comments as we move along today. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Bassam, welcome back.
Happy to be here, Larry.
I taught my last class for the semester yesterday, and it was. I had a great class this semester. I really enjoyed the students.
You know, one of the joys of being a professor is you get in touch directly with students who are eager to learn. And I always have mixed feelings at the end of the school year.
I do too.
Because, well, you know, it's time to move on. But on the other hand, it's the last time I'll see these students as a group. I run into many of them everywhere around the world, not just in Wisconsin. And It is, we live in an interesting time right now. Students are concerned about jobs. Some are going to graduate school. Some are taking some time off. They call it taking time off to do some public service. I don't call that taking time off.
No.
I see that as being part of what we do as citizens. And the UW commencement will be a week from this weekend, mm-hmm. and the schools will be finished formally in about a month. Mm-hmm. But, Larry, I know you know this, and our listeners also know this. Learning doesn't happen only in the classroom.
No.
Learning is taking place all the time. And if we are well-trained and well-focused on what we do, we can engage in recreational activities, but we continue to learn. And so my plea to parents, students, colleagues, fellow citizens, in the summer months, do some reading. Do some serious reading. Go to a science center. Go to a zoo. Go to a botanical garden. Enjoy the outdoors. Learn more about how much energy we are really using and perhaps wasting. Enjoy music. Go to concerts. Go to opera in the park. It'll be in July in Madison. I mean, but there's so many educational and recreational activities that we all learn from. And if what we learned in the classroom gives us the discipline to learn more as we do different things in society.
I have just this morning got the blog for one of my former students who is right as we speak, he graduated about a year ago. He is bicycling from South Africa to Cairo. So he's
wow
on a bike. So
wow.
So he set a blog up, and I tell you, it's really you think about and you hear from your former students and what they're up to and what they're doing, and it gives you a good feeling sometimes.
It's very rewarding, and I really would like to hear from more former students. I'm now finishing my 39th year as a faculty member here, mm-hmm. Looking forward to my 40th year. In the past 39 years, I've had approximately 25,000 students who enrolled in my classes.
That's amazing.
I won't mention all their names here today, but I'll just mention two that you and the listening audience are familiar with. And the first one is Patricia McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
She took chemistry with me some years ago. And the second name is Phil Pelletieri. Both, I'm very proud of them, proud of all my former students who are now engaged in a variety of activities, ranging from being a school registrar to teachers to lawyers, medical doctors. Even some of the medical doctors treated me as a patient. So I am eager to hear from former students. And if anyone in the listening audience is a former student, please, you know, get in touch. Or if you know someone who was in my class, I am planning a set of 40 celebratory events to mark my 40th anniversary as a faculty member here. These will be public appearances, including what I do on your program, around the state, around the country, in fact, around the world. And these activities will begin on June 1st and will go on for a full year. So I'm, as I say, eager to hear from former students and, you know what, from future students, too.
I tell you what, well, you're going to have all that up on your website, I assume.
Yes, yes.
Your events at www.scifun.org.
That's correct.
.org.
Right.
And you're having an open house. The chemistry department isn't, is it not?
This weekend, actually, for people who are close by to Madison, you're most welcome to come to our open house Saturday from 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. We have a variety of activities, including hands-on, minds-on activities for youngsters and their parents to participate in. We have programs that deal with doing chemistry at home, you know, household using household chemicals. There are other stations that we have that relate to how energy can be utilized. Mm-hmm. There's a presentation called Explosive Chemistry. There is a tour of the various instrumentation centers that we have in the chemistry building, and people get to see how we use these instruments in research. So everybody's invited. It's this Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the chemistry department, 1101 University Avenue in Madison, or you can enter on Charter Street. You don't have to register or anything like that. You just walk in.
Free and open.
Free and open. Free and open. And I'm my group of students will be there actually doing two of the six stations that will
cool.
be spread throughout the building.
As you mentioned, students, as you think back about changes in students, what changes have you seen across the years in student attitudes, motivations, and what does it take to succeed in college today, in your opinion?
That's a that's an important question to address. You know, in the past several years, I'd say decades now, four decades we're talking about, there have been a lot of changes in society. And of course, we all live in the society with the technological advances that we have now. So I would say that the students nowadays use more technology than they used before. iPods, cell phone, instant messaging, YouTube, and so on. I'm not so sure how useful that is. I think it's useful as a social networking device.
Yeah.
How educational it is, I just don't know. There are all kinds of, you know, immediate and instantaneous responses given back and forth. Most of them, I would dare say, are not in good proper English either. Mm-hmm. And that's been taken advantage of by the availability now of Twitter, where you just have to use shorthand notation. So my concern is about the quality of what's being communicated using these advances in technology. As far as the students themselves are concerned, I think they're bright, eager to learn, wanting to do good in society, which is very, very important. The circumstances now are different than they were 20 years ago or 40 years ago. We don't see much engagement in political activities. So we still have the Mifflin Street Block Party. That's a carryover from the issues surrounding the Vietnam War.
40 years ago, yeah.
40 years ago, but we don't have political activism in this area. So that's different. And the concern I have about this is that students you know, should try to find ways by which they can focus on some important issues in life beyond beyond using the technological toys that we have here. By the way, these technological toys didn't just show up. They are the result of a great deal of research in science and in engineering, and very smart and clever people have put them, made them available on the market to us. So it's really up to us to use technology in a way that enhances the quality of our lives and the quality of our society.
You know, President Obama spoke last week at the National Academy of Sciences meetings in Washington, D.C., and he said he was restoring science to its rightful place, and he urged the Academy members to join him in creative efforts to engage people in science. I assume you like that rhetoric.
I love it. It is the kind of political leadership that will benefit the country. The president himself is not going to make any changes in what goes on in the laboratories, but the president is setting a tone and is urging all of us, not just scientists, but especially scientists, to participate in putting science in its proper role in society. What is its proper role in society? You know, I'm eager to hear from callers about this. Mm-hmm. What do our listeners think our the proper role of science is? Part of it is to make sure that there is open and free inquiry, that academic freedom is respected and practiced, and that is the product of research activities can be then put to good use to serve society. We need to be supporting researchers and education people in pursuing important societal questions and trying to deal with what I consider to be, Larry, the two most important issues facing us. One is energy. Let me just mention two of them and then elaborate a bit. One is energy and the other one is human rights. What do I mean by energy? The population of the planet is increasing rapidly. The energy demands are huge. The Industrial Revolution has been so successful to the point that we now produce a lot more greenhouse gases than was ever produced before. And we utilize materials that need to be recycled. So there are issues that relate to energy needs, energy consumption, and all of these are, of course, matters that have economic and political and social ramifications. Human rights, that's a huge umbrella that includes dealing with the quality of life in societies that do not have the benefits of advances in science and technology that we have here, a quality of life in societies where they are oppressed politically, quality of life in our own society. I include all the issues that we now call diversity issues under human rights. Mm-hmm. In our state of Wisconsin, in our city of Madison, everywhere in the United States, there has to be respect for the individual. There has to be legal and societal frameworks by which we can function and enjoy the same benefits as others have been enjoying. So this is a huge kind of an umbrella, human rights, and so is the other one, energy. And included in this, having to successfully deal with the two strongest forces that we face now in society, forces that I call science and religion. Mm-hmm. Science and religion sometimes appear to be at odds with each other, and they really are not. Some people think they deal with different domains, and some other people feel that they contradict each other. And it's through education, quality education, that we can improve the discourse about issues that relate to abortion, stem cell research, end-of-life treatment. All of these matters are very, very important. And I am an advocate. In fact, I'm going to spend a good deal of my time in the next several years dealing with the overlap and the interaction between science and religion, and to make sure that we have opportunities to have quality conversations, and not necessarily to have complete agreement, far from it, mm-hmm. but to have quality conversations and discourse about what it takes to make our society sustainable and viable.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry and William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin Idea. Give you a chance to join in now. Give us a call with your questions or comments. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, and the email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking science, science research, and education today with Bassam Shakashiri. Larry Mueller here. Again, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234. And let's take some calls. Tom in Richland Center, we go to you first. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how you doing? I appreciate your last point you made. I think our responsibility for science is to explain the external costs or the side effects or whatever name you want to call it, but the overall holistic picture of what we do with our technology, and not just let business or whoever political agendas pick just part of it. Burning coal, for example, has some great benefits. It's got some huge side effects. So I think that's a role for science to keep pointing that stuff out.
I agree, Tom. It's a role for all of us, and including the business community. They mean well. They have a job to do. I think it's important that we communicate well with each other, explain what science and technology are all about, even explain the difference between science and technology, and then point out the huge benefits that can accrue as a result of scientific research and technological advances, as well as the potential hazards and possible bad ramifications that are associated with advances in science and technology. So I thank you for your comment, Tom.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And let's see. Let's go to Brittany in Eau Claire next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have recently discovered the NPR news shows, and I just wanted to say it's quite interesting and a nice change of pace. So
wonderful.
Thanks for having that. I just wanted to make a comment regarding the, you know, science and society, and I think really one important thing that we need to do is get society to be able to make database decisions in many aspects of life. I think too often, you know, you turn on the TV, we were talking about all the YouTube and everything's available right at your fingertips, and anybody can put anything out there, and so often I find that, you know, parents or adults in general are just making decisions that are based off of something that they hear, not necessarily with any data behind it.
That's a good point, Brittany. I think we have to exercise good judgment about a variety of issues, and what we do in science is, of course, very disciplined and very carefully and meticulously reviewed by other people before publication. And so I think it's important, yes, to use information, to use data, as you say, in making decisions. However, I want to quickly point out that not all societal problems can be solved in the ways by which we do science, because mm-hmm. we're dealing with human endeavors that are not scientific in nature. And so this, again, relates to Tom's earlier comment about making sure that science and technology are understood well by all segments of society, and that we use science appropriately, yeah. We use technology appropriately. So it's a very good point that you make, Brittany.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Brittany. Appreciate it. Good point. Nancy in Grafton, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Nancy.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
I'll tell you, what really breaks my heart is that the University of Wisconsin is doing late-term abortions now. I just do not think that our state and dollars from our taxes should go towards killing unborn babies. And I don't care what you say you can get out of this as far as scientific advances and stem cells and all these things, but gosh almighty, does our state have to be involved with killing these little babies? I just can't fathom that.
Thank you, Nancy, for raising this point. It is at the very heart of what I think should be a healthy dialogue between all of us, among all of us, who care about the quality of life in our state and elsewhere around the country. And the issue of abortion and the issue of the legality of it and what how it gets supported or not supported has not been really discussed and scrutinized by us here in Wisconsin as well as it should be. There are very strong emotions that are involved here, and I respect that. And I just ask that we think about what the real issues are. Are they legal issues? Are they scientific issues? Of course they are. They're part of the society and the societal issues that we deal with. And it is important for us to come together to agree on what the laws that we have governing us are and what they mean. So I appreciate your concern. I respect your feelings. I respect your thoughts, and I respect you as a person with those feelings.
Thank you very much for calling, Nancy. Appreciate your call as well. If you'd like to join in, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We're talking science, science research, science education with Bassam Shakashiri. And Bassam, we got a kind of a science question here. We emailed in from Kurt in LOA. He says, I work with many different kinds of lights, and I'd like to know what happens to the mercury from a fluorescent light or a high-intensity discharge lamp if they are broken or cracked. Does it float up? Does it sink down? Does it disperse everywhere, or does it just kind of stay inside that tube?
You mean when the tube is broken?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not a good thing to have happen. Mercury is one of the over 100 elements that we have. Of course, it has many uses. It is hazardous. There are emission standards that, you know, our state has enacted recently and so on. So I would be very careful about this. Mercury is a liquid. It flows all over the place. I would try to discourage people from using such lamps for the reason that Kurt is mentioning. You know, when they break, what happens? It's the mercury vapor that is poison. Nobody's going to drink mercury, but it's the mercury vapor. Mercury is not only a useful element, but it can be insidious. There are very strong concerns now about eating fish from rivers and lakes in Wisconsin because the amount of methyl mercury, which is a compound, part of a compound that mercury gets into, gets absorbed by the fish, and then we eat it. So I have a little on my website. I have under Chemical of the Week, I have a whole slew of items related to mercury and to its uses and its potential hazards. So, Kurt, I invite you to go to www.scifun.org. On the left-hand side, you'll see a colorful chemical cylinder, and it says Chemical of the Week. Click on that, and then scroll down and find mercury. You'll get more information that way.
And by the way, you mentioned water. Mary in Middleton emailed and would like you to comment on water supply as being equal to energy as a concern.
Of course, I really did great injustice when I just briefly mentioned energy. Water quality around the globe, not only here locally in Wisconsin, is a very, very huge concern to the society. And there are scientists and technologists that are addressing these issues. Water is a very fascinating substance. Did you know, Larry, that water is the only substance that exists on the Earth in three phases: gas, water vapor, liquid water, and ice, naturally occurring that way. And I have on my chemical, one of the chemicals of the week, in fact, the most recent one.
The most recent one.
Most recent one deals with water. So Mary's question about a quality of water supplies making sure that we don't have droughts around the world, which then contributes to disease, a spread of disease, famine. All of these issues indeed fall under this very nebulous topic that I just said, energy, and need to expand on that, and that's definitely included.
And I should mention that coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we'll be talking about water quality and water conservation issues with Joel Jonas and Jeff Ripp. So that's I'm going to be sure to mention your website again, too, when we get into that part of it, of the program.
And I hope Mary stays tuned for that, too.
All right. Yeah, please do, Mary. Megan in Chippewa Falls, your turn now. Hi, Megan.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, science and education. I am currently back in school as a secondary math teacher, and much of the information that we're receiving deals with creating meaningfulness for students and connections between concepts and fields. And so I just like the professor's thoughts on what he sees for curriculum and the value of that math and science integration in our classrooms.
All right.
Well, thank you, Megan. I'm glad you're joining the teaching forces. We need good teachers throughout Wisconsin and elsewhere. We need good teachers in inner city schools, in rural areas. This is another area that is of great concern to me. In the next 15 to 20 years, we are likely to experience a huge shortfall of qualified teachers. But the integration of science and math is very, very important. You know, it's often said that mathematics is the language of science, and that's up to a point is true. Of course, real language is also the language of science.
Sure.
You know, learning to think quantitatively, learning to use that quantitative thinking in addressing and solving problems is very important. Having the students see how these mathematical concepts are used in science is important. So you could learn in a course in mathematics, you could learn about the quadratic equation, how to solve the quadratic equation. But you know, in chemistry, we use that quite a bit to solve some science issues. Or if you calculus is very important, I think everybody should. In high school, should be exposed to calculus and acquire the skill of using it as it applies to scientific, engineering, economic, financial issues that we have to deal with. So I am a firm believer in making the scientific and mathematical concepts clear to the students, so they learn them, but they also see how they can be used. I'm not saying we do this in everything, make it all practical, which would just make sure that there are connections between what is going on in the classroom and the application of those concepts to what we do in research, what we do in society.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Megan. Let's go to Carolyn next from Oshkosh. By the way, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. We have an open line or two. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. Now on to Carolyn in Oshkosh. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. How you doing?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
This is my first time calling here.
So well, I'm glad you called.
I'm a little nervous. But that was the abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Issue. I was adopted, you know, when I was 2 weeks old. In fact, if I remember correctly, I was the youngest adopted in, I think I was adopted out of Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And the year that I was adopted. So, anyways, yeah. Forget abortion. Yeah. I mean, I'm alive today. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thanks.
I'm happy to hear from you, Carolyn. And I think it's just great that you called and expressed yourself. In our democratic society, one of the most valued, treasured dimensions is freedom. Mm-hmm. Freedom of choice. And this is really at the heart of this debate that has to do with abortion. And this is why I said earlier, I really think we have to have a healthy, respectful dialogue between science and religion, and the beliefs that we have in our society, so that we can truly enhance the quality of life in our society and deal successfully with questions that are ethical, questions that are moral, and all of these questions are, for the most part, outside the domain of science,
yeah,
and outside the domain of technology. So when we have a technological advance, we should make decisions as to how we want to use it or not use it. I'm a strong advocate of having this conversation, respectful conversation, whether it is about abortion or evolution or creation science, all of these very important human concerns that should be aired and discussed openly but respectfully. I keep saying respectfully because I have been witness to a number of exchanges where there was no respect for the other person. I'm not saying respect the ideas of the other person, but respect the other person as a human being.
And Carolyn, I hope you call again. Thank you very much for calling. Now that you've called once, you know how it's easy. You can do it again. Gail in Ojibwa, we're on to you. Hi, Gail. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to make a comment about teaching science as something that's practical and usable versus teaching science as something that's sort of beautiful in and of itself. I feel that when I went to school, in high school anyway, it was both science and math were always taught as something that, well, you should learn how to do it because you're going to be able to use it in real life. Whereas when I went to my English class, it was, you know, here's all these really great ideas. You should delve into them and use them to, you know, sort of experience beauty. And I feel like there is so much beauty in science and in math, that I'm just wondering if that trend is still in existence today, that science and math are really only taught as, like, here's the facts, as opposed to here's something beautiful you could get into.
That's a nice question, too.
I like your observations, Gay. I like where this is going. Some places that's how it's taught, you know, the facts and that's it. But science is a human endeavor. It has its own beauty. It has its own challenges. And it's very, very important in all classroom activities, not only to emphasize the applications of what is going on in science and in mathematics, but to share the joy of doing science and the beauty of appreciating what scientific researchers go through and what they accomplish. I believe that science is a liberal art. It should be, and that's how I try to teach it in my courses, making connections toward applications. There's no doubt about that. But science deals with very profound issues and deep questions that we simply cannot connect right away to immediate societal applications. You know, look at the investigations, explorations, the origins of life. There are no immediate practical applications to this. Look at the research that was done in the 1940s on related to radar that resulted in the development of magnetic resonance imaging devices. Little did the people who did that research think that a whole human bodies will be put through magnetic resonance imaging machines for non-invasive diagnostic purposes. So there is beauty in that. There is beauty in the rigor of scientific explorations. And so, you know, that's why I hear and others also hear about science teachers, good science teachers who turn some people on to these kinds of appreciation, this kind of appreciation of what science can do and also what science cannot do. So, Gail, great observation. And we also, in our Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy, we have a program that links science, the arts, and the humanities. And I invite you, along with everyone else, to visit our website and look around and browse around and see the connections that we try to make among scientists, artists, humanists, as well as other groups.
Yeah. Gail, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. And Bassam, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. Your website, as always, www.scifun.org, scifun.org. Invite everybody to take a look at it. So, and this the chemical of the week got water.
Water is our latest chemical of the week. I invite your guests and everyone in the listening audience to go check it out. Lots of interesting information and connections about this very, very unique substance and its ramifications to the quality of life that we have in society.
Thanks, Bassam.
Thank you, Larry.
Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry, and William T. Evu, Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA and the Director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. Really, always a pleasure to have him with us. And he will be back with us again, I'm sure. I know that for a fact. He'll be back and we'll talk again about science and science research. But, you know, water's been on our minds through the program, and we're going to be talking about water quality and water conservation issues with Jill Jonas, Bureau Director of Drinking Water and Groundwater at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Jeff Ripp, Water Conservation Coordinator for the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. So we'll keep on that water track for a few more minutes, maybe another 45 minutes, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.